That first hymn we sung talked about we are sheep of His pasture. There's been a lot said about sheep lately, things like sheeple. I think we know what that is referring to. We sure are living in different times right now, aren't we? The New Testament talks a lot about a changing world. In fact, we're admonished to watch what's going on, to be aware at a level that you don't find in normal society. We are to be watchful. In fact, the church used to teach that. They used to teach us to watch world events. And we would dutifully do that. We were watching Germany like a hawk because of certain prophecies that we identified with the beast power. In response to that, years ago when I was new to the truth, I subscribed to U.S. News and World Report. Boy, I was going to watch world events. Keep track of what's going on in the world. Only to find out that they were clueless too. There wasn't much in there that was very helpful as to what's going on. I don't know, is that still published? I don't even know. I haven't kept in track. U.S. News and World Report, they still have such a thing. Anyway, worthless for the most part. But we were told to watch. In fact, it's a biblical admonition. Christ told us to watch. Question is, what to watch for? Because we can be distracted very easily. We can think something's important, while something that really is important can slip by without being all that obvious. A couple of things. There is the visible world as to what's going on. We see that. Events happen. But there's also an unseen world. And we can understand or we can detect that unseen world through spiritual comprehension. The average person is not going to see what's going on that is being spiritually motivated. There is an unseen world, but that unseen world is provoking and directing what's happening in the world that we can see. There are people acting on behalf of that spirit world. And we can read of that in Ephesians 2:2, where it says, "Wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world." Average, everyday goings on. Before we came to know the truth, we just floated along with the way the world was going. "Wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience." Do we realize what that's telling us? That there is a power directing people as to what they're doing. Now, that'll be important as we get further into this, but I thought I'd introduce that thought at this point just to illustrate the fact that not everything going on is humanly devised. There is a spirit that works in people attuned to that spirit, and that spirit has an objective that we need to be aware of, and that's part of watching. The spirit that is in this world is very deceptive. And it can fake us out so easily. It can fake out humanity in general, and has for centuries. Sir Walter Scott penned this phrase years ago in his poem Marmion when he said, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." And another author added to that another couplet to Scott's original where he says, "But when we've practiced for a while, how vastly we improve our style." Okay? Deceptive is an art form. And it works so well. We need to be aware of that as we watch what's going on, because it's very technical, it's very complicated, and it's not random. The most important things that are going on in this world are not random. They are caused by the spirit that works in the children of disobedience. Satan is waging an end-time warfare, especially the end time. There is a massive disinformation event where we almost can't believe even official information. We have to be discerning. Satan is a master craftsman of deception. Revelation 12:12 kind of gives us a picture of what's going on right now. Revelation, not just now, but especially now. Revelation 12:12. "Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe unto the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time." That gives us a picture of what to expect in the last days. Satan is going to see time is running out. And it's interesting that things similar to that have been said as it regards some of the political things going on in the world. Interesting contrast. But keep in mind that in this end time scenario that's being described here in Revelation 12, we see Satan's wrath. His wrath is going to be against whom? His wrath is going to be directed to achieve what? What he couldn't achieve otherwise? Satan's primary weapon is deception. Over a page in Revelation 13, verse 14. I'll start in 13. "And he does great wonders, so that he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceives them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying unto them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed." It's going to be that serious. Satan's wrath is going to be exhibited in ways that I'm not sure we can picture at this moment, but we're given a picture. This is what's going to be. And the people are going to be taken in by it. It's only a few that aren't going to go along. There is a hidden agenda to control society. There always has been. But the means have not been as good in the past as they are now, because of the high level of technological advancements, medical advancements, deceptive lines of reasoning, and through even pharmaceuticals. That's the nature of our day. That's what's going on. That's what's happening. And don't think it's random. These events that we see are not just rolling out willy-nilly. There is a hidden agenda. There is a plan underlying all of this with the intent to control society. The situation and the expected response to that situation was pre-planned long ago. But especially as Satan's wrath, on account of his fear, knowing his time is numbered, are going to be ramped up dramatically. And that deception is primarily at the subliminal level. It's not right out there, and it's not right out front. There's a few people, I'm sure, who have the general sense of it. But how many? There are rumors about, and we can consider them as wild-eyed speculation if you want to, but that there is a vaccine coming. That everyone is going to be required to take this vaccine. There's a conspiracy theory that that vaccine is going to contain a microchip you won't even know is there. And that you won't be able to function in society unless you have a badge or a card that shows that you had the vaccine. In effect, you wouldn't be able to buy or sell without that card, without having taken the vaccine. This is all crazy stuff, you might want to say. And let's go there. Let's just say this is wild-eyed conspiracy theories. But is it? We'll have to find out. We'll have to be watching. Just an example. This month, the Maine governor proposed a law that no one could be exempt from a vaccination on religious grounds. She might be out there on her own, or she might be in tune with what's being thought about and she just happened to let it out. Who knows? But it's a possibility. It's not that hard to imagine that such a thing could happen. We've got prophecies that talk about similar things to that. What is the mark of the beast? There's all kinds of speculations. The point is, something could happen that would create that circumstance. We have a prophecy that says, without being in compliance with the beast power in the end time, that it's not going to be possible to buy or sell. That's written. So I'm sure it's true. How we get there? Who can say? But the mechanism is in place where it could happen. The point is, how would we react? Should it be? I was sent a brief YouTube presentation, and it turns out it was Bill Gates. It's only about 4 minutes long. But he was making a presentation before the CIA. And in that presentation, he had a study that shows that there is a portion of the brain that energizes when a person is religious. Now, he calls them religious fanatics, but who's a fanatic to someone in secular society? A fanatic would be anybody who won't give up their beliefs on a whim. That's a fanatic, perhaps, in some people's definition. But he shows that there is an area, and I can send that to you if you want to see it. It's not lengthy, but it's Bill, no question, and he's got all his graphic stuff. Studies have been done. They want to develop a vaccine that will dampen fanaticism, particularly religious fanaticism. You see what they're after? Now, how do you accomplish that? How do you create a vaccine? If this area that lights up in the brain is the result of God's Spirit energizing a particular region in the brain, how do you create a vaccine that will counter a spiritual component? Because our thoughts and our minds are basically spiritual. Okay, we have the brain that gives us our physical functions and keeps us alive and does all the routine stuff. But then there's another area, another component in our brain that is spiritual. Our thoughts, our beliefs, our understandings. What chemical can shut that off? They're acting or they're proceeding as though there was some, and they're working on it, according to Bill. We'll see. But how does something physical destroy or prevent something that's spiritual? If it doesn't work, the only other way is to kill the carrier, kill the person. Do you see where they're going? See how subtle it can be, how hidden it can be. There is an agenda against religion. The secular world, what we call the liberal world, is against religion. There was even a proposal recently, I don't know if you heard about it on the news, that they want to stop congregational singing because you project your voice and you're going to spread your germs and cause disease epidemics, okay? The idea is out there. Stupid? But they're trying. They're trying this stuff, okay? It's silly now. We laugh at it now. We say, that's absurd. But look at the recent couple of months. Okay, if I had given this message a year ago, and if I were describing what's going on right now, you would say, that's absurd. That could never happen. They could never deny us those liberties, could they? Not possible. That's just so far out. That's nuts. And here we are. Revelation 13:17 is that one that, since we're here, I am anyway, 13:17. It's the one that talks about that no man might buy or sell, save he had the mark of the, or the image, I'm sorry, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. There is something that's going to be done, according to this prophecy, that is going to prevent people from engaging in commerce if they don't go along with the system. That's what it says. Our battle is not so much physical. It's easier to conceive of it in that realm, but it's not so much physical. The battle is in our heads. And doing battle in that dimension requires counter-strategy. What can we do to improve our tactical strategy? We may want to think, well, this stuff is only political. But what's driving the political agendas? I think I've described that to some degree already. The battle is not only without, but within. We've even had people in our fellowship sphere, and we can read of them in Jude 12. It's not something new by any means, but Jude verse 12. Verse 11, woe unto them, for they have gone in the way of Cain and ran greedily after the error of Balaam. Money for reward, and perished in the gainsaying of Korah. They explain away anything. These are spots in your feasts of charity when they feast with you, feeding themselves without fear. Clouds they are without water, carried about of winds. Trees whose fruit is withered, without fruit, twice dead, plucked up by the roots. Did you ever see a tree pulled up by the roots? It continues to leaf out and grow for a while, but it dies from the roots up. What nourishment or what moisture there was in the trunk and the branches eventually gets exhausted, and the tree is fully dead. But that's how it works. Spots in our feasts, something also to be aware of. It can happen. We've had tares. We've heard of tares. We know who they are. They look like the wheat. Looks just like it until maturity, at least. They come in with the intent to infiltrate and pervert and contaminate a congregation with doubts and that sort of thing. They think they're right. They have an agenda. They think theirs is a higher purpose. Tares. We're warned about them. Are we paying attention to their presence? We've had people who have known the truth, and they changed it into a lie. Let's look at Romans 1:25. Who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. There are people who have changed the truth. It was experienced back then, and the phenomenon never went away. We still have it. It still happens. People who have taken God's truth and perverted it enough, it may still sound good, but perverted it enough where it's deceptive. We're told that we should redeem the time because the days are evil. And that's in Ephesians 5:16, for example, Ephesians 5. I'll start in 14, that looks good. Wherefore, he says, awake, you that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore, be you not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. There's a lot there. Number one, we need to understand what God's will is. What purpose is He working out? What does He expect of us? What should we be doing? Well, one thing it mentions is not being asleep. We should be awake. And we should be redeeming the time. What does that mean? Redeeming the time. We are to make use of every moment to advantage. Don't let time get wasted. Not in this calling, not in this occupation. We shouldn't be asleep as to what's going on. We have to be mentally involved. to make use of every moment, to make use of every opportunity. Sometimes we don't even recognize an opportunity when we see one. Ignoring societal conditions can be dangerous. And a lot of times we do it deliberately. Some choose to just simply rebel against the knowledge of what's going on. Some people just prefer to ignore it. That's the easiest way. We all live our lives. We got stuff going on. Things need fixing. There's problems here and there. We get distracted. Luke 21:34. This is not a new thing. Luke 21. It's here somewhere. There it is. And take heed to yourselves, verse 34, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the earth. Watch you, therefore, and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. The way that's worded tells us that this particular passage is especially appropriate to the end time. Watch you therefore and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Clear reference to the second coming. There's another translation of that. Let me read it. I don't remember what translation this was, but it kind of gives us a different picture. It says, "So be careful, or your hearts will be loaded down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, so that day come upon you suddenly. For it will come like a snare on all those who dwell on the surface of the earth. Therefore, be watchful all the time, praying that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will happen and to stand before the Son of Man." Being watchful is part of our calling. We need to be watchful. A lot of people have dampened their cognitive functions. They've smothered them with their preferred self-delusions. You talk to some people and you realize they are totally unaware of the realities of what's going on today. God's instruction to us is that we need to be circumspect. Let's flip over to Ephesians 5. Being circumspect is eyes wide open, looking around. Watch your environment. Know what's happening. Ephesians 5:15. We'll start. And I think I read this earlier in relation to something else. But it says, "See then you that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil." God sees things differently. And He expects that we be attentive to the array of spiritual factors that are at play right now. We need to watch what's going on in the world. We need to know what areas to monitor, which things are important and which things are irrelevant. In Matthew 10:16, Christ tells us to be wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. That's sort of the characteristic of someone who is circumspect. We don't need to be militant. We don't need to go start planging people with shovels or any of that nonsense that's going on. We don't need to riot. We don't need to pull out our weapons. Wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. Why shouldn't we be activists? And why shouldn't we be militant? Well, this isn't our world. However, we need to know what is going on in this world because we're in this environment. We need to recognize the world that we're living in, the real world. And being aware of the real world means what? Simply being aware of the realities of what's going on. Not many people live in the real world, the real, real world. They may think they are. I was surprised to find out that the most requested booklet that the church ever put out back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, I don't remember the exact title of it, but the most popular booklet, and maybe Coy could remind us, but it was How to Escape the Great Tribulation. People were looking for a way of escape. Do you remember that booklet? People are interested in preserving their hide, basically. They want to keep their hiney out of the frying pan. Okay? That's what's going on here. That was a popular booklet. They wanted to know how to escape what was coming. And we can appreciate the sentiment, but I don't know that that's our calling necessarily. There will be those who will be protected. I'm not saying everyone will. Especially those who are doing God's work with the greatest fervency. There's an assignment for them too. It's called the End Time Martyrdom of Saints. We'll see how that works out. But one thing about being a martyr, you got to have some backbone. Okay? You got to have some backbone. Spiritual backbone. We'll see. Truth is powerful. We should know that. Christ told us in John 8:32 that the truth will set us free. Free of what? Well, free of fear. Free of deception. Free of wasted efforts working for things that have no real value. Free of false hopes. How much of this world is oriented to false hopes? We need to have a component in our thinking that searches out the truth, the real truth. So many people are operating by fear, not by faith. Faith is the real antidote to fear. Well, sure, we can be alarmed about things happening. We can be concerned how they affect us. But we need to connect our religious awareness with a reality also. True religion has a practical aspect because it's founded and anchored in truth. When you were first hearing the truth, and I know it was in my case, it became obvious to me. The truth has a ring to it that nothing else does. Okay? Real biblical truth. It jumps out. It makes so much sense. But then again, the same information to somebody in the world means nothing to them. What's the difference? The component of God's Spirit working with us and working in us. Faith casts out fear. I could give you a quote of someone, and I think you'd recognize immediately where it came from. We had a preeminent religious leader, national leader once, who said that we have nothing to fear but fear itself. How insightful was that? Let me give you the whole quote. He said, "Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance." Do you know who gave that quote? I'm sure you do. FDR. Do you know when he gave it? You'd think, well, this must have been in the worst part of the Depression. Nope. It was his inaugural address on March 4th, 1933. He gave that quote in response to the Depression, the economic chaos that was going on at the time. Have we seen anything like that lately? Fear paralyzes people. It can paralyze whole societies. We know that now in a way we never did before. Fear, and oftentimes, is not grounded in realities. A lot of times it's fed by not being aware of the facts. And fear can be contagious. We know that now. Fear is the mechanism of crowd control. Do I need to draw a picture? Who's behind that? We spoke of that earlier. Mixing fear with falsehoods, you've got the potential for a bad situation. Add to that governmental or scientific ineptitude or irrationality, things can get really crazy. Base it on a sinister motive, that's when the situation goes evil. We're told that we ought to live by faith rather than sight. How better could we do it? We need a reliable source for truth. Number one is God's Word. Number two is comparing that with what we see happening around us, with the awareness of what the Word says. We have significant forces at work right now, promoting their own agendas. There's this opposed to that. None are entirely right or pure. The biblical agenda is freedom. Freedom from fear. Freedom from error. The freedom that God gives us is a personal, free moral agency. We need to choose to follow the way. We have a thing called common sense. And all too often, it's not that common. But common sense is disciplined thinking as opposed to suppressed thinking or suppressed expression. We need to wake up to our peripheral environment. Clearly evaluate every situation that we see. We need to know how to exercise critical thinking. That's the whole point of "the truth shall make you free." This world began enveloped in darkness. And God injected light into that darkness. Now let's understand something about darkness. And we could be turning to John 1:5 while I mention this. But you don't need to create darkness. It's natural. It's always there. If you remove light, guess what happens? The illumination doesn't linger. It's suddenly re-enveloped in darkness. Darkness is the natural state. It's always there. And it's what comes back if you remove the light. John 1:5. I'm going to start in verse 4. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in darkness, and the darkness comprehends it not. It's like the darkness is exclaiming, "What's this? Where'd that come from?" Light is injected into darkness. We live in a political climate that has so many subtle controlling tactics deeply embedded within them. We probably have no idea to the depth of the deception that is being put upon society. The present information streams are putting forth consistent with that agenda. That's what we need to realize. What's happening is part of the plan. And that plan, from the secular side, is to control the masses. And they have done an experiment to see how to achieve that. Are we paying attention? What we're seeing is only a microcosm. It's only a veiled dress rehearsal as to what can happen in the future. Let's understand that we're living in the age that we call Laodicea. It's one of the seven church eras, as we call it, the church's ages, and that's been assigned to the very end time. We need to factor in the Laodicean mentality into our response to what we're told. One of the characteristics of the Laodicean mentality is the inability to make cognitive judgments. It's in Revelation 3:18. God tells them they need eye salve. For some reason, they're not able to see the obvious. Now, that's applied to the church, yes. But for that matter, we could apply it to society as well. It's not just the church that is Laodicean. And Dr. Hay made this point many years ago, that we live in a Laodicean society. And that reflects itself in the church. Misconceptions can saddle us with a prophetic blind spot. To reject what should be obvious. The way the world presents information to us gives us a misdirected focus. It's taken our eyes off the real point. That's partly why we can't see. We're not getting a sense of what's going on from our religious leadership either. They speak of faith without identifying specifics. They talk about faith in an ethereal, non-specific, non-tangible way. What do they mean? What is faith? Faith of and by itself. What is it? It's a disconnected faith. A platitude without substance. Hebrews 11. We know something as to what faith is and how it operates. The writer of the book of Hebrews made a very interesting observation. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. There has to be substance to that faith, whether we can see the evidence of it immediately or not. Through faith, verse 3, we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things that do appear. Faith has to have substance. Where do we get that substance? What do we bring into our faith structure that gives it reality, that gives it real substance? What facts, what basic truths establish our faith? Question we need to ask ourselves. What is your faith based on? And what responses exhibit our faith? 1 Peter 1, verses 6 and 7 describes some of that. The question is, and I think it's appropriate to this time, are we remotely ready for the Great Tribulation? The end time conditions, it's telling us, the Bible tells us, the end time conditions are going to be so bad that it will become potentially lethal. Just the fear factor itself. Luke 21:26, it talks about men's hearts failing them for fear. People are going to even drop dead from nothing more than fear. Our whole society is largely emotionally and mentally underdeveloped. We don't know how to process situations. You're looking at Milwaukee? You're looking at Atlanta? We don't know how to process situations. Society is crazy. What else can you say? We, of all people, must learn to react and live without fear, a kind of fear. Like FDR said, there is a kind of fear that's debilitative. There's a kind of fear that is motivational. How do we employ that response? Makes all the difference. What shapes our responses? What do we act on? Fear or faith? Or faith using fear to proper motivation? In the last couple of months, we've gone through what we could call mental whiplash. And if you haven't experienced it, you will. We can't rely on our media. We can't rely on our government. We can't rely on our medical profession. They're not telling it all straight. We can't even rely on our religions because they've bought into some of this stuff. We can't rely on sciences, what we call sciences. And certainly not political agendas. The World Health Organization has exposed itself recently. And look, we can't even rely on our justice system, can we? We're living in a situation that is just a foretaste of what's coming, just a dress rehearsal. This isn't it. It's not over. There'll be something else. Right now, it's a question of our freedom. Then, it'll be a question of our lives. I'm sure we've noticed by now that the major energy exhibited is by the powers of evil. The motivated people in this world today are on the evil side. God's elect should not be the most attentive at this time. We should not be inattentive to things that are or should be to us obvious. The Apostle John in the epistle, 1 John 4, gives us a trajectory as to how we should relate ourselves. 1 John 4, verse 4. This, I think, is key to understand and it's a good place to wrap it up, where he says, "You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world." That's where we need to be grounded. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Kind of substantiates what I've been saying. What is going on in the world is very much at the direction of the great deceiver.